The sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot see.
Your stories don't define you, but how you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief storymaker at Elkins Consulting. Now, you listeners, you know why I say chief storymaker, and it's because you can't be a great storyteller if you're not making stories in the first place. And one of the things that just recently happened in my world is that I listened to a TEDx that I watch a lot of these that I just loved. And it was about storytelling. And of course, listeners, you know that that's the thing for me. So I reached out to Karen Eber to be on the podcast, and she said yes. This was a few months ago, and I'm so excited to be finally interviewing her on Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. Quick reminder to listeners, if you are in the middle of job interviews and you want to be more prepared, I have a course available just for that purpose. And for $99, you can participate in job interview storytelling. Check out elkinsconsulting.com to learn more. Karen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello to a fellow storymaker.
Yes, absolutely. And anyone who gets up on a TED stage or even applies to do a TED, they already have a story. Even if they don't ever end up on the TED stage, the fact that they even tried, because that's scary and it's hard, even for very well-known public speakers, getting on the TED stage is a challenge. So I honor that in you.
Thank you. There is something that feels extra amped when you step into that red circle that's so different than any other session. Like, it's very artificial in many ways, yet your job is to make it as authentic and real as possible. So I'm delighted that you enjoyed it.
Thank you. Well, our listeners know that I love to start a conversation by asking my guests to share something about themselves that most people don't know about them. And I do that to make sure that we have some context for who you are. And so many times we get stuck in one version of a person just from experiencing them in one way. And by sharing a story that most people don't know, we give our listeners an opportunity to know a more complex side to my guest. So, do you have a story you can share with us?
I do. I have two different color eyes. I have a brown eye and a green eye. I was born with blue eyes like so many babies. And about 4 months, they started to change different colors. And in the right light, it's really noticeable. It's my favorite thing about myself. Like, I have a built-in answer to that dreaded question. Tell us something interesting about yourself. But as much as I love them, I realize that so many people just don't know what to make of them. I'll literally be mid-sentence when someone will kind of, their words will slow down and they almost stop talking. And I see their eyes moving back and forth between my right and my left, almost like their brain is trying to decide, like, do we look at the left one or the right one, the brown one or the green one? And as soon as this happens, I know it's coming and I brace myself because it is almost always, did you know you have two different colored eyes? Which,
oh my gosh,
it's always a hilarious question.
Thanks for letting me know.
Right. Sometimes I play along and I'm like, oh, no, really? But my response doesn't matter because we're about to go on a script because the very next sentence is almost always, I know a dog that has that. And I'm like,
oh no.
Thank you. Like, what do you say to that? Next sentence is David Bowie. David Bowie had two different color eyes, which I am sorry to break the news to people. He did not. He had an accident that had one pupil dilated and that made his eyes look different, but they were the same colors. And then it gets into what color eyes do your parents have? And my personal favorite, do you see the same colors out of each eye? No. And sometimes even like, do your eyes give you special powers? And this thing that I love now is this burden, because now it's these really awkward moments where people are calling their friends over and all of a sudden there's 10 pairs of eyes like, look at me, look here. You know, my moment of paparazzi fandom where people are trying to get a look at my eyes and I'm no longer a person. I'm now a thing and a sideshow. I'm like, hey, you got to see her eyes. And I decided I didn't like it. So I told a story. I said, the next time it happened, I said, I was born with brown eyes. And you know how we all have that box for our crayons that you throw in, the broken ones, the peeled ones, the perfect ones? For me, I had this cigar box and I was in my room coloring about the age of 4 or 5 years old. Dinner was going to be for a few more hours and I was getting hungry. So I dug into the box and pulled out a green crayon and it didn't really smell like anything. But when I took a nibble, it had a really interesting texture. So I ate the crayon and I liked it. So I reached in the box and grabbed another and I ate all the green crayons in the box. And the next day I woke up and my eye was green and then I would be quiet and people would just not know what to make of this story. Like their brain is telling them logically, she did not get different colored eyes from eating crayons, but she kind of said it so convincingly. I'm not really sure. And I would let them off the hook that my eyes are not two different colors because of the crayons, but it created this shift in this interaction where I was able to reclaim this thing important to me and be treated like a human. And they would laugh and realize they actually asked me, do you see the same colors out of each eye? And so that was my entree into storytelling, that recognizing, you know, it's not just a way to convey meaning or persuade. It's a way to create connection and even change energy in what can be like the most artificial of circumstances.
I love that for so many reasons. And the first part is that idea of when you said, they just realized that they asked me a really stupid question. And so many times when we have an awkward moment or those really interesting things about us, it's like adults revert to their childhood, which in some ways is so beautiful, that sense of curiosity. I'm going to ask a question without even thinking about what that question is.
Right.
I mean, so there's something kind of beautiful about that, that they suddenly revert to a kid that has to ask this question. They're not
thinking.
They're
trying to make
they're just
sense
asking.
Of it. Right, right. Right. It's totally
And even if
pure
it's a stupid
curiosity.
Question.
Yeah.
I know, but it's so stupid. I love that. And it reminds me, my dear friend Andy Vargo has this whole series on owning your awkward. Mm-hmm. And when he asked me what my awkward was, I said, well, I'm petite. I'm very small person. I'm about 5'2" and I'm little. And oftentimes I'll meet people online like this, or I'll meet them when I'm sitting down and I stand up, or they meet me in person and they go, you're so little. Like they're shocked.
Right.
And it's that moment of, okay, and I love that you have this story that just kind of contradicts that tendency to put you in a box as something other than who you are based on one interaction, one observation.
Well, yes. And it made me memorable. I have people that will still mention that they think of me when they see crayons. And I get messages from people that there's now a green emoji on this platform and a green crayon emoji. But yeah, it's, you know, I think as you're describing, people will get to this point where they just can't quite make sense of something, or they had a presumption of what something was. And when it doesn't line up, it's almost like their brain hits the speed bump and it can't get over it. It can't move forward. And I find that stories are definitely a way to own your awkward and navigate that, but also show them, like, come to this store. Maybe there's a different way of thinking about this over here.
Oh, I love that. That was such a good start. Thank you, Karen. That is just, that was kind of perfect. Of course, I knew that would be. So let's get into how you share. I'm trying to make sure that this makes sense, this question. How do you share with somebody what their story can be? How do you uncover that? And what I'd love to hear is a story where you did that with somebody. So again, it's one of these, mm-hmm. tell me what you do without telling me what you do.
Yeah.
Because I know I do that periodically. Well, with my podcast guests, I help them uncover their story. So can you tell us a story about when you did that for one of your clients?
I don't have one specific story, but I can tell you the process and what happens. You know, a lot of the work that I do is probably very similar to what you're doing, where you're helping someone who has a moment or an occasion to tell a story, or they want to tell their own story, but they're just struggling and they're grappling at the edges. And so I just get them talking. And as they're talking, it's almost like there's a canvas in my head where I'm storyboarding out what the story is and I can see it. I'm not coming with the baggage and the emotions around the story that they have. I can step back and structure, like, what are the pieces that other people are going to respond to? And how do we do that in a way that's going to capture the most attention from their brains and be understandable and make them feel that connection? So the way I do it is exactly like that. I'm like, I just get them talking. Tell them, don't worry about what you're saying or how you're saying it. Don't try to tell a story, just talk. And then certain pieces will gleam brighter to me than others. And I just start to see how to put it together. Once they've talked, I say, okay, can I play with this? Here's what I hear. What do you think? They're like, how'd you do that? I'm like, because I don't have your emotion. I'm not coming with the baggage. Right.
I'm
coming
connected to it.
Yeah. And so it's very easy for me to see and do that quickly. So recently I actually was working with a C-suite team that was getting ready to have a national meeting, and each of the C-suite and I were coming together to help them figure out what stories were they going to tell paired around their respective pieces. And we get on this call, and I've never met each before, you know, one-on-one, first time meeting them, having to build rapport, get trust, get them telling me what they're going to talk about, more importantly, what they want the audience to experience through that. And then I just have to start asking questions without knowing anything about them. And we always get there. Somehow by the end of the call, like there's something that we pick up and we go. It's easier, I feel like, when you know people, because then you can bring up the things that they would never think to bring up, you know, stories about different moments. And that is so helpful in telling their story. But either way, through conversation, we just uncover magical things.
I love that, because I'm brought back to one of the first times I started seeing that skill of pulling out somebody else's story. And I was on a hike with some friends. It was like an 8-mile hike, and we were up in the mountains, and I started telling the story of the first time I went camping in Montana after we moved here, and the baby was 6 months old. My husband and I were at this campground, and an adolescent grizzly came into our campsite on the other side of our campfire. And I was telling this story and the intensity of it. And I'm laughing, of course, because there's humor involved, because we are all okay. Nobody was injured. So there's humor there. And the whole group of six of us women on this hike, we were laughing so hard about this experience. And I remember I looked back at the person behind me. I said, okay, so tell us a story. And she looked at me and she broke my heart, Karen. She said, oh, I don't have any stories. And I said, what? Of course you have stories. She said, yeah. I don't have any stories like that. And I said, okay, are you outdoors? Do you go camping ever? Do you like to go camping? I knew she did. Yeah. She said, well, yeah, I love to camp. And I said, have you ever had an experience where you had an interaction with wildlife? And she goes, oh my gosh, there was this one time. And of course, she tells this hilarious story about being scared in the tent, hearing this noise. It sounds like some big critter. She looks outside and it's a raccoon. And the story made us all laugh. And I looked at her and I said, don't you ever tell me you don't have a story.
I find that's very common though. And I will I find what happens when you say something like tell us a story, or someone's trying to think of a story and they can't, it's that your brain almost doesn't know which file to access. Like, yeah, we've got all of these experiences, but the question is almost like, tell me about your childhood. Like when I do keynotes as a part of my job, and I will often bring someone up and I'll ask them, tell me about your childhood. And they literally have said, are you serious? Which is exactly the reaction I want, because the question is too vague and your brain just goes, wait, what? Like what part? And I almost always get responses like, well, I grew up with this number of siblings and this family around and this type
of home. Some timeline. I was born here. And
very general,
I get that
too. Because there's nothing specific. And then I'll ask them, what sound or smell reminds you of home? And then immediately we're at a holiday table, we're describing some tradition, and now we're unlocking so many stories. And I try to reinforce for people that stories come from constraints. When you can't think of the story to tell, you've got to put these constraints in place with the prompts, like you said, that are asking about being outdoors and encountering wildlife, that unexpected wildlife and things like that, because that tells your brain, oh, you know what, we've got these stories, go into this. So whenever people say, I'm not a good storyteller, I don't know what story to tell, like, of course not. You've got to put questions or prompts in there to narrow your focus and make it easier. And really, one step further, you start building a list of potential ideas without knowing when you're going to share it or who you're going to share it with. But you now have this place that you can go to when it's time to tell a story. And most of the time, you come up with a whole new idea just by scanning that list.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yes. And I, what just popped into my head is the other strategy I've used as a podcast host is to share a very brief story of my own, because guaranteed that will unlock the story of the person. I think that's why I said, tell me a story, was because I just assumed she would tell a story of a wildlife encounter, because I had just shared that story. It was at that moment that I realized that I need to be intentional about the story I tell in terms of unlocking the story of the person in front of me. Is there a story that you like to share, a personal story you like to share that does that, that unlocks the story of somebody near you?
No, it happens, but it's not one story. It is very much in the moment. So a lot of my work is working with different leaders in difficult conversations and in these moments where they're feeling vulnerable. And in that moment, an idea will pop into my head and I'll share that story and that prompts it. And what I love about it is it's how you know your story resonates, right? I see your story and I read you a story, but it's also, it also means that your story is playing in their head too. And both of which are key, but I don't have a go-to. I will use prompts like you do, depending on the context and what we're trying to do of, are we asking questions about their family or struggles they've had or their professional career or hobbies or a time that they faced, whatever. I love the prompt, what's something you should have gotten rid of but can't? And you get any one of these and you just get a thread that you can start to pull, and that will lead to so many other things.
Something negative just popped into my head. Not about that.
Please share.
Well, I heard somebody when I was asked, I was prompting questions, and I didn't ask that question because I had this awful feeling she was going to say my husband. And I remember stopping myself, realizing I didn't want to ask that question.
Yeah, so I understand that.
The prompts have to be the right prompts.
Sound or smell. What sound or smell reminds you of home helps.
That's a great
one. It's fairly neutral.
That's a good one. So you mentioned that you just had these calls with the C-suite team so that they could start to uncover some of the stories that they would share over the course of this conference. Yeah. So I'd love to hear about when you were able to uncover one of their stories that really made you feel like you were in the right place. There's so many times where I have a conversation where I walk away and go, oh, I love what I do. So I'd love to hear that story from you.
That's one of my prompts. What is a moment that makes you say, this is why I love what I do? Because we all have that. For this particular thing, what happened is it's a fairly young company and they've had a lot of explosive growth. And so coming together, there's people there that have never met some of the leaders that we're going to be presenting. They have aggressive growth plans, and it was a really important moment to establish some trust or strengthen the trust and help them see their role in the growth of the company and where it's going to go. And so we started with all of that of what, for each one of these, what is it that we want people coming away feeling? What is the things we want them thinking? And that to me always then leads us to, okay, now given that, let's start to talk about different stories that can create that. Because this was an introduction for many, and there was a really key component here of reassurance and what we're doing, trust, all of that. For a couple of them, I had them go back to when they got into the industry, and different reasons, different angles in both. But it was really a way for them to make the points that they wanted by the time they talk about the growth and things like that. But also, you know, when you're sharing a story like that, that is perhaps the greatest vulnerability that people respond to. One of the people wanted to really talk about literature, and the place where the meeting was being held is where John Steinbeck often spent some time. And so they came in thinking that that's where they wanted to focus the talk. And just the more we talked, we realized actually that's not quite the right angle. There's something else here. And so to me, to get to that moment of this is magical, it is always getting them really clear on the audience and what is it that you want them to come away feeling? What is that internal shift? And then what do you want them to do externally? Otherwise, you're just getting on stage and telling a story and hoping for the best. And so I feel like when we get that, then it's so much easier to ask prompts and questions that help ensure that they're going to achieve that.
Perfect. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm sitting here nodding my head over and over again. I'd love to hear, as you're talking about these, the people that you're working with, I can see you light up, and we'll probably use a clip of this on video because you look beautiful. And because that is seeing you light up is part of the story.
Yeah.
And so many times we're telling a story without engaging the rest of our body and expressions. And people can hear it in your expression, in your voice for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to see that love for what you do is what is lighting me up right now. So when you were talking about that, one of the things that I thought about was how it makes me feel when my client nails their speech. So tell me, I'll briefly, this happened with me with one of my public speaking coaching clients last year, where she did a really important speech. It was a TED style talk, but it was for a different organization.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else in the audience who knows me took a picture of her and texted it to me and said, "She nailed it. Congratulations, coach." Just being, you know, she has the potential to seriously inspire and have huge positive impact on her community. And to have that text message come through, just, it caught my breath. It took my breath away. I want to hear your story like that too, being that foundational support for somebody who has potential for that kind of impact.
One of the people I was working with, first sentences of our conversation together was, "I don't want to tell a story about me." I'm like, okay, we'll figure out what story to tell, but just say a little bit more. And she's like, "I don't want to make this about me. It's about them." I'm like, sure. But there's a way to tell a story about you that makes it about them. And I just put it aside. I didn't worry about it. We started to work through the audience and what she wanted. And the more we talked, the more we kept coming back to this example where she started out in this sales role. She kept fighting it. "I don't want to make this about me." And I said, the more you make it about you, the more detailed that we get, the more the audience is going to have their own version playing around in their head. There's a difference between telling a really detailed personal story in service of the audience and telling a really detailed personal story for you. And we want the first part. So we start putting together this story. And it was fine, but it needed more things that were really going to be memorable and have the audience see themselves in it for when they were younger sales professionals. And so she talked about how she went in and she just didn't like being around the other salespeople, where you could just feel their salesiness, like radiating off of them. Like, I have to make that sale. Like, how it just felt all inauthentic. Right. And so I said, okay, I want to make that even punchier because that's such a great visual, right? Radiating off them. I said, let's pick like a corny cologne, like radiating off them, like Jacquard.
I was just going to say that, the 80s Jacquard.
Yes,
scent.
Right?
And so Duran Duran.
Exactly. I said it and she busted out laughing. And so she's like, I get it. I'm like, see, that specificity people are going to have that moment they're going to identify with. Maybe they weren't. I don't know. So we do this and we put things like this into the talk. She gets up to deliver it. And I happened to be there because I was doing a keynote at the same event. And the room was vibrating with laughter. They were just roaring. She gets to the Dracar piece. They are all laughing. She's like, anybody wearing Dracar? Anybody? And then a couple people put their hands up and she's like, we'll talk to you later. It was so funny. She gets off the stage. Her boss is like, that was amazing. You crushed it. When I had a private moment later, I went up to her. I'm like, that was so great. And the Dracar, she thought she came up with it. And I was like, perfect. I don't care that she didn't remember that I didn't. That's how much she internalized it. Like, she took the suggestions and then she figured out how to do this and she incorporated her humor. And I did say to her, you do realize that because you made this about you and the way you made it about you, it resonated. Because you put these specific things in that were true to you, that's what people want. And that was the shift for her, hopefully.
Oh, I'm sitting here grinning. Oh my gosh, that is
apologies
such
to
a
anybody
great
that wears
story.
Dracar.
Well, you know, it is kind of a dated scent. I loved it when I was in high school in the 80s.
Yeah,
I think the problem wasn't the scent. It was the overuse of it. And people would like douse themselves in it. It's kind of like the Axe of the 80s, right?
And the certain type of person that would wear it. I think that was the other problem.
Yes. Well, and as you were talking about being in a room full of salespeople, that you get, I was thinking more slime than scent. Mm-hmm. Like my first thought was like, oh yeah, the competitive sliminess that I have experienced in that kind of environment is immediately what came to me. So
But if you can work scent into things, we have, I don't even remember the number. We have like 4 receptors for taste and hearing and all that. We have something like several hundred for scent. And so whenever you incorporate scent, like if I talk about the coconut oil on the beach, like a coconut oil sunblock, like you can almost smell it. It's one of the fastest ways to get people into a moment.
I love that. Thank you so much. That is not something that I have used in the past, but I will use it and I will attribute it to you. I'll say my friend Karen Eber told me about that.
That's all right. You can claim Dracar. I don't care.
Oh no, I won't claim Dracar. It's funny too, that you mentioned that, I think most of us kind of have a hard time sometimes when somebody repeats something back to us that we said and there's no acknowledgement. I mean, as grateful as I am that I had that impact, every once in a while, there's that little edge. And one of the things that always brings me back is my friend Melissa Hughes talks about gratitude a lot and the neuroscience behind gratitude. She wrote Happier Hour with Einstein, which was really the game-changing book for me. And one of the things that has helped me in those situations is being able to see the gratitude, which is exactly what you represented in that story, was I don't care how she got it. The fact is she nailed that and her audience had an opportunity to truly connect with her in a way that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Well, and the fact that she thinks she did it will give her more confidence next time and more likeliness to tell a story about her in service of them. You know, to me, what was important is she remembers the experience of how we work together in a positive way and that it unlocks stuff for her. There are plenty of other times, I can't tell you how many things of mine that have been stolen and my book even, right? All the time that stuff happens. I'm not okay with that. Let's be clear there. But for things like this, if people become better storytellers and they think they did it, great.
Yeah, I think about that with even our kids. We have 2 sons that are 22 and 25. And when my younger son, who's very, very, they're both really thoughtful and kind. My younger son is the one that is very insightful about things and he'll call me on stuff. That, you know, to the point where I'm like, oh, Max, thank you for calling me on that. Ouch. And there are also times where he'll repeat something back to me as if it was his idea. And I don't hesitate to just let him have it for that same reason. If he is embracing it as if it's his, I'm so glad for that because it's something that I know is important as in his success as a human being. So I
Yes.
hear you. Wow, that's so cool. That's so cool. Well, let's bring this full circle. I keep thinking about your story about eating crayons because, you know, it's memorable.
Right.
When you think about how you got into what you're doing, there must be, now I don't believe in light bulb moments. I don't believe that things go from dark to light instantly. I truly believe that there's a dimmer switch. Every idea is on a dimmer switch. And you gradually get brighter and brighter. And there are moments that bring you to the full bright. But I think subconsciously, you've been picking things up all along. And I know that when I was asked to do a keynote on storytelling, and I had never done that before, it was all about customer service, customer experience. And they asked me to do storytelling. And I said yes, and then walked away feeling really stressed about it. Oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? I've never done this. And I have this a light switch moment where it went from the dimmer to full bright when somebody said, well, I've heard a lot about storytelling, but never anything so practical. And that was my moment, my change in how I saw what I was doing. What is your story of that?
My moment was a little different, but my first job, first professional career, about a year into it, I needed to go to a professional dinner. And I am a socially awkward introvert. I don't love being in settings where I have to make fake conversations. I was way worse at 20 whatever. And in fact, I volunteered to go to the dinner because I was on a team where this was going to happen. I was like, I'm going to go and get this over with so I don't have to go and do this again for a long time. Get to the dinner, and there's seven of us from two different companies that are exploring this potential collaboration. And not only was I a socially awkward introvert, but the entire table was. We're sitting there in silence, like looking longingly at the other tables that are laughing and having natural conversations. And we would try to start, and it would be this awkward, like, it's like, you know, the balloons that slowly, the helium balloons slowly sinking to the floor on the last day. Like, that's what our table was. And I could not think of anything to say. And that's, as an introvert, those moments are very hard. And I finally realized it's because I don't do small talk. I want to do meaningful. Yet I've just met these people. How do you jump into meaningful? And so I did what every logical person would do. I kept my eyes on my plate. I'm like, I give up. This is just awkward. One of the people at the table clears his throat. His name was Aaron. He clears his throat and he says, I am building a deck on the back of my house. And we all relax. Like, thankfully, someone is breaking this awkward silence and contributing something. Not at all the topic we thought that would be appropriate for a business dinner, but he's got it. You go, Aaron. Tell us about this deck. And he's telling us there he has to relocate a wood pile to be able to frame the deck. He's putting it into a wheelbarrow, taking it to the edge of the yard to restack it. On the third load, he takes a piece of wood off the pile and comes face to face with the raccoon. He's freezing in the position, and the raccoon freezes in the same position as though they are both under arrest. Only made more ironic by the fact that the raccoon has like the bandit mask on his eyes. So they're both standing there in a standoff, frozen, both scared of each other, not sure what to do. And he says they're in this draw for a minute, and then he decides to slowly start taking a step back. The raccoon hightails it out of there, and situation solved. What happened at our table is not what happened on your hike. We all started peppering him with questions, and someone else starts sharing this question, this story about an unwanted house guest. And now we're the table that all the other tables in the restaurant are looking at because we're having normal conversation. And I really wondered, like, is this Aaron's go-to story? Because the point of the dinner was, we were discussing Aaron's company being a vendor for my company. So part of the reason the whole dinner was awkward is I came in braced for the conversation, the sales conversation. I was like,
right.
Some of you are wearing Dracar. I just know it. So
don't slime me. Right?
Exactly. And I just didn't know how to navigate what felt artificial. Yet here's this person telling the story to create connection, telling the story to lead us to a different moment. And I thought, like, is this his go-to sales story? Does he tell this to break the ice? But I was like, it doesn't matter, because I always took his call after that day. He felt like he was approachable. He felt like a friend. It wasn't someone that I was like, oh my gosh, this person again. It made it so much more dynamic and interesting. Before that dinner, would not have thought about using a story in a business setting. And after that dinner, I realized how important it is to use a story in a business setting outside of presentations, but just in moments of connection, just in moments of let's be human, even if this feels really inauthentic.
You just shared that so beautifully, Karen. That was such a beautifully told story. I hope that everyone listens to this episode of this podcast. And here's why. You told a story about this guy named Aaron. And listeners, I'm going to ask you, what words would you use to describe this man? I would use charming, entertaining, and thoughtful. And these are big words. And listeners, I'm so curious, what words would you use to describe this man named Aaron? Now, I want you to think about those words. These are big words. These are value words. You're describing somebody with these important value words, part of his character. Now, you are using important words to describe a man you've never met, all based on a story told by a woman you've never met. Total strangers. Oh, think about the power of the stories that you're sharing about other people and how your behavior creates the stories other people are sharing about you. It's pretty powerful. Karen, that was such a great way to wrap this up. For our listeners, all of Karen's contact information will be at elkinsconsulting.com in the show notes associated with this podcast episode. Karen, as we wrap this up, what do you want listeners to know? How do you want them to leave this conversation?
I think there are so many opportunities to tell stories every day. I'm sure you get this question of how many stories is too many. I haven't met someone that tells too many. Look for the opportunities to take an awkward moment and make it one where there's laughter, or just to learn something about someone. There's so many ideas for stories and opportunities to tell stories all around us.
That's perfect. You just made my whole day. Thank you so much for joining me. Listeners, it's your turn. What will you do today that you'll pay attention to and maybe build a story out of? Maybe you're picking up kids from school while you're listening to this. What are you experiencing as you're waiting for your kids to come out of the school? Maybe you're on your way home from work, or maybe you're going for a walk with your dog. What are you paying attention to that could eventually be a story that you could collect and share to connect with people in an authentic and personal way? I would love to hear what stories you come up with. Please share them with me. Follow on Instagram at Sarah Lynn Elkins, or just email me via my website at elkinsconsulting.com. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Karen.
Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.